And welcome to another edition of the PCRF podcast. I'm Keith Wesley, standing in for Dave Page, and I am the medical director for Health East Medical Transportation here at St. Paul. And with me today are
Josh Salzman, the director of the Critical Care Research Center at Regents Hospital in St. Paul.
Marshall Washick, paramedic with Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul.
And Aaron Burnett, I'm the assistant medical director at Regents Hospital EMS in Minnesota.
Great. Thanks for being here, guys. The article we're going to review today is actually from the Journal of Emergency Medicine. This is one of their clinical reviews, which tends to be often a review of a particular subject. So it tends to be either a meta-analysis or a review of the literature, or in some way a summation of the current state of an issue. And the title of this is The Emergency Department Evaluation After Conducted Energy Weapon Use. And I'll throw in there, for those, it's a taser, even though that's a registered trademark. But conducted energy weapon use, review of the literature for the clinician. And this is by Drs. Wilkie, Bozeman, and Chan from the University of San Diego Medical Center in San Diego, California. And essentially, like I stated with a preface on this, it was a review of the medical literature on the topic of, we'll refer to it as CEWs, but for most of us, really the most common form of CEW out there is by the use of the taser. And they want to review the topic and offer evidence-based recommendations to ER physicians regarding the evaluation and treatment of patients who receive an exposure to a CEW. I'll turn it over to Dr. Burnett, because this is a topic of great interest for him, and I think he's read all 140 articles that they reference in here.
Well, I appreciate the shout out, but I must admit that I have not read them all. You know, this is an interesting article. We don't often do review articles on this podcast because it's a little bit different perspective on evidence-based medicine than when you're looking at a single prospective trial. But I think this one's very useful. And when Josh talks about the methodology of this study, perhaps he can comment on some things in terms of review articles. But the reason I think this is very useful is because it answers a very important clinical question that many of us in the field, as well as the ED, see day in and day out. And that's, police call you because they've just detained an individual. They deployed a taser one time, several times, either or, and they'd like them evaluated from a medical perspective. And so the real question is, from an EMS viewpoint, is do I need to transport this patient to the hospital for further evaluation, perhaps EKGs, perhaps cardiac monitoring, maybe laboratory studies? And that's really the question that this review article seeks to answer. So it does it by doing a literature search. So this is a retrospective study. It searches the Medline database, only English language studies. And the keywords that were used were taser, conductive energy weapon, electronic weapon, and several others along that general pathway that really they attempted to identify studies that were prospective in nature that looked at these conductive electrical weapons. And they only looked at randomized controlled trials or clinical trials. They also did, however, include both prospective and retrospective cohorts, as well as meta-analysis. So this is really an overview of what's out there in the literature on this topic. How can we try to piece all these individual studies together, and how can we try to take some real clinical conclusions that will affect our day-to-day practice when we're deciding what to do with a patient that we've been called to evaluate medically because they were tased?
Well, I think, you know, to look at some of the summary, they broke down their results into various recommendations. And of course, again, Josh may want to discuss the methodology, but with this, they came up with a list of class of recommendations, with anything being a class A recommendation as being, in their opinion, based upon an outstanding and overwhelming amount of literature in support of that. And so the first recommendation was regards cardiac monitoring, an ECG screening after exposure to CEWs, and they found that there was no data whatsoever to suggest routine even ECGs for any short or prolonged period of time following an exposure. Again, in asymptomatic, awake, alert patients with short durations. So, again, always a few caveats there. That may not be your typical wild drunk who gets tased, so that's not going to apply to that recommendation. Recommendation two was routine laboratory testing after CEW, and they found, again, no evidence to support that that routine labs need to be drawn because it's extremely rare to find any significant abnormality in the labs in, again, the asymptomatic, awake, and alert patient. Recommendation three, evaluation after use of the CEW in a drive stun. So that's when the taser, either you take the darts off or you take the cartridge off and just use the drive stun, which is actually more of a noxious cattle prod stimulation and not a total body contraction. And again, showed no elevation in lab values or ECG monitoring in that, which again makes sense knowing the physiology of the difference between the drive stun mode and the probe mode. And then again, the same kind of recommendations, their Class B recommendations regarding evaluation after the probe. Said, you know, okay, there may be some muscle contractions, there may be some falls associated with it, and you need to certainly evaluate for the possibility of injury related to that, but again, routine ECG testing and cardiac monitoring just simply aren't warranted. So with that, I'll turn it over to Josh to talk about the methodology of this, and then we can move into the area of, okay, well, this was a great review article for ER docs. What does it mean to me as an EMT or paramedic in the field?
Well, I commend the authors for going through the process of doing a literature review because it can be an onerous exercise, and to make sure that you, A, have identified the potential articles that may be existing in the literature, and then having somewhat of a structure to evaluate each of them, make sure that they're relevant when you've identified those that you want to get into a review process more deeply, that you take the time to do that. So I think from a methodology perspective, they did a great job of getting the information in one from a very large set of potential articles to review into 20 that seemed to be the most relevant to what they were looking at. I also think that if you look at the author list, which is on page 602, the details of the 20 reviewed articles, it's always refreshing to see the actual authors of the article give themselves a poor grade for their own work. So when you look at some of those inherent biases that authors may have, it's good to see that they had a structure to prevent from grading their own work as wonderful. Because when you look at all the literature in these top 20 articles, there's only about five or six authors that have primarily done a lot of work in this area, and two of them are on this paper. So it's helpful to see that that was objectively reviewed. And I think Dr. Wesley's point is really important to follow up on, and I think we'll have a more broad conversation about when you look at a review article, what information is then transferred into practical care. So the recommendations that are listed in here are maybe somewhat limited because they only address those people who seem to be physiologically normal and don't address those patients where you may use a taser. So somebody who has other comorbidities going on or has taken some type of chemical substance and that's the reason that you're using it. So always taking this input with a grain of salt and applying it broadly takes a little nuance sometimes. But I think overall, from a design perspective, they've done a nice job presenting the info, having a structure for their review, and making sure that that they were fair to all of the articles that came up.
So I think one of the key things about this paper, it keeps coming back in the discussion, which is very important for our clinical use of this decision when we're evaluating patients in the field, is that all the patients in this in these studies, after they had the conductive electrical weapon deployed, is that they had a normal mental status. They weren't hallucinating. They weren't agitated. They were not in excited delirium. And that's a huge differentiation that I think providers need to be able to make. Because if you have a patient who's in excited delirium, this study does not apply to them. We cannot take the things that this paper argues for, such as not needing an ECG, not needing laboratory testing. We can't take that and apply it to a patient who's hallucinating, who's delirious, who's not awake, alert, oriented with a GCS of 15. And that's very important. I think from my perspective, this review paper makes a strong argument that in a patient who is awake, alert, with a GCS of 15, who's behaving normally and not showing any signs of excited delirium after the deployment of a taser or other CEW device, I think it really makes a solid argument that that patient probably does not need to go to the hospital routinely to have electrocardiographic monitoring, to have laboratory investigations, or to have any other invasive monitoring. It seems safe from this article and this select subgroup of patients that it's okay for them to go with the police to jail. Dr. Wesley and Marshall, what is your opinions?
Well, and I agree with you, Aaron, in that I think it's important to note that the taser itself or conductive energy weapon is safe, and that's what I take away from it. But that doesn't mean that there aren't underlying conditions that need to be evaluated in the ER. I mean, there are a lot of less than stellar people out there. But generally there's a reason for being tased, whether it's, you know, a head injury or alcohol or some combination of both, drug overdoses. And so from an EMS perspective and a street perspective, I think it's important to say, all right, look, I don't have to so much worry about the taser killing my patient. I have to worry about the head injury now that he sustained from falling and hitting his head on the curb, or from the massive amount of alcohol that the patient ingested. So, but yes, I agree that this is, I think this is a good study. And like Josh said earlier, I can't imagine going through 140 papers.
A lot of papers.
And then grading them based on some sort of a rubric that they developed. So,
I agree, and I think that as Dr. Burnett put it, we have to put this into context. When we're talking about CEW exposures to subjects who are otherwise asymptomatic, and so certainly there are those people, and we see those on YouTube every day, of those that just simply get tased for
bad attitude,
yeah, bad attitude, or in law enforcement we refer to as actively resisting. And after they've been tased, they realize that hurts and I'm going to cease being actively resistant. But how to implement this? Does this apply to every EMS agency? Well, I think, you know, from in a law enforcement perspective and being married to an officer, I know that that smaller communities where the CEW may be used fairly rarely, there is a legal liability issue that occurs to take that subject in to be evaluated, if anything, to provide protection to law enforcement that, in fact, the individual did not suffer harm as a result of the CEW exposure. And that's certainly reasonable. Hopefully, though, we can disseminate this information to our medical colleagues to not go and spend $10,000 on an unnecessary workup to further validate the fact that, indeed, the patient hasn't, or the subject in this case really, hasn't suffered any harm from the device. So I think there's a little bit of combination of both. Clearly, I know that this protocol has already been incorporated in Hennepin County, where Dr. Jeff Ho, who is one of the most esteemed authors in the issue, and that is routine exposure to CEW if on arrival of by the Hennepin County medics, the patient's awake, alert, no signs of intoxication, the probes are simply removed, and the individual is sent off to jail by law enforcement. And that's completely consistent with the literature. So if people out there are looking for best practices for the interaction of fire, EMS, and law enforcement, for subjects exposed to CEWs, I would recommend that you contact Dr. Ho at the Hennepin County Medical Center. Actually has a textbook on the subject that was published last year. Any other parting comments on the subject? All right.
I think we covered it.
Well, great. Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the PCRF podcast, and we'll see you next time.